That's a selection from The Rarity of Experience, a new album from Chris Forsythe and the Solar Motel Band. Joining me in studio is Chris Forsythe, band leader and guitarist. Chris, thanks for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Harmonious Dance is the name of that cut. Describe it and the sense of the entire album.
That song actually came from a dance piece that I did music for a number of years ago in New York with a choreographer named Miguel Gutierrez. And it was a kind of respite of beauty in the middle of a rather chaotic contemporary dance piece. And I've just sort of had it in my back pocket for a long time. The band recorded it for an album a couple years ago, and it didn't make the cut. But it always kind of was nagging at me, kind of like, the song's got a hook. And, band played it really well. So we did it for this album, and I think a kind of crucial cut on it.
So let's note, though, you cite New York. You're from New Jersey and now live in Philadelphia, as do presumably most of your bandmates.
Except for the bandmate who lives in New York who's from Philly. Peter Curlin is his name. And I had played music with him for many years when I lived in New York. And when I put the band together here, I called him up and said, I'm putting together a band in Philly, and I think I'm going to need to get some Philly people. And he said, well, you can't fire me. I'm coming down. Let's give it a few months and see if the commute can work. And it has. That was a few years ago.
Now, let's note that the record release, as it were, is tomorrow night at Philomoka.
Yeah.
Contrast live performance versus working in the studio.
Two totally different things. I like to work really spontaneously and quickly in either setting. I mean, the band improvises a lot, so the songs kind of expand and contract in a live setting. As far as the studio goes, it's kind of like you're creating an illusion. So what I try to do is actually capture that energy. Like we do the tracking real fast. We tracked this whole record in maybe 3 days, but then I sat with it and worked on it for like 10 or 12 months after that, a little polishing here and a little addition there. You see what you've got from the improvisations and you can kind of build off those things. And then hopefully it still sounds kind of like an organic, coherent experience on the record as well as it does live. But, you're going to hear it over and over and over again in a recording. And live, it just happens that one time.
I think improv, I think of jazz. I also think of what's to some as a pejorative, the jam band scene. And
sure.
This album seems to have aspects of both. Let's listen to another cut.
Sure.
Chris, this is a song whose title we can't really cite here on FM radio. However, it's from a Rolling Stones piece.
It's from a Rolling Stones song that was turned into a document, also the name of a documentary that was never released. If I'm in a situation where we can't speak freely, I usually refer to it as the title of that song is the first 10 minutes of the controversial Robert Frank documentary about the Rolling Stones' 1972 American tour.
Well, the song was AKA Schoolboy Blues, and then looking into it further, it's actually an intended ripoff of a Dr. John song from his seminal Babylon album.
Indeed.
There's a little bit of whimsy to it. It's called The First 10 Minutes Of, but actually the song, I believe, is 11 minutes, 53 seconds long.
Yeah, well, I originally did a solo version of this song, and it was really based sort of rhythmically and compositionally off the first 10 minutes of the film, CS Blues, we'll call it, because I love that film, and I would just often just sit around and sort of play along to it, and I realized it had this kind of loping rhythm that I really liked. So I did a solo piece of it, which was 10 minutes. But like I said, the music expands and contracts with the band. So it ended up being 12 on this version, yeah.
So to see you in consecutive performances, one, as an audience member, might hear very different versions of the same songs.
Yeah, we try to mix it up. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned a jazz. And I by no means have jazz chops. I'm not a jazz musician. But I increasingly see what we're doing as the way I organize the band and the way the band performs is sort of comparable because the band membership is somewhat fluid. We've had, multiple guitarists and drummers kind of coming in and out. People are busy. Talented people are busy and have schedules, And so it's really like who can make the gig, and I try to let people also have their own voice in it, the other musicians. So That keeps it interesting for me and keeps it changing too.
You know, people are busy and people do have schedules. So how do people make money in the music business in 2016? And I'm informed by actually a marketplace report just last night about streaming programs like Spotify. They're of great help to listening habits, but what's needed is a similar service for musicians to help them really identify their audience and grow.
Yeah, I mean, if you're asking me how musicians make money in the music business, that's I'm trying to answer that myself. I mean, you know, I'm kind of like the ultimate freelancer. I mean, there's the band, you know, occasionally there's like a sync license for something. I teach at University of the Arts periodically. I give guitar lessons. I play with other people. So it's really just it's a hustle, and it's just trying to, you know, stay focused on the thing that you love.
But what percent of that hustle, frankly, is derived from sales of, in this case, the rarity of experience?
We'll find out. The record only just came out
a couple
weeks
ago. Of course, we
wanted
to go number one with bullet on the top of Billboard, but realistically and frankly, that's not how it often works.
You know, true. Touring, you know, is good, but at the same time, you know, I have a family. I don't want to be away 10 months a year either. So,
Having said that, how extensively have you toured in the past?
Oh, quite a bit. Yeah, Europe, America, Canada. I mean, we've played at, you know, the Wexner Center for the Arts in Columbus, and we've played in someone's basement. So sometimes on the same tour. So it's, it's all over the place. I mean, you do what you can do, you know. You know, I toured a lot solo. That was like, in a lot of ways, that was more practical. But, you know, like the music is really, this music that I'm working on now is really, it needs a band. You know, and so trying to figure out a way to make that happen.
And your influences clearly are bands. We cited the Rolling Stones, but one can hear aspects of Miles Davis, Neil Young. Talk about another influence, television, and
sure.
Tom Verlaine.
Huge influence. I mean, I was a big fan of them from the time I was a teenager. I probably discovered them through, back in the 80s, through like REM or something like that, talking about them as an influence. And in the late 90s, I was fortunate enough to be able to take guitar lessons with Richard Lloyd, the other half of that great guitar pairing from that band with Tom Verlaine. And, you know, he basically taught me how the guitar works and how music works.
Did he say, kid, you got talent?
Not at all. He was, he's a character. He's really the type of person and the type of teacher that sort of gives you the information and gives you the grammar and then lets you write the sentences. You know, some days we would sit around and he would just like read poetry. Other days we would like talk about scales and so he was really into music as this sort of, metaphor for life and, you know, very cosmic kind of guy. It's funny, television thought of as being a punk band from New York, but I think those guys were really just like the last hippies, not the first punks, you know?
And it's always hard to stratify different right. eras of history, especially musical history.
Totally.
The cuts on Rarity of Experience are primarily, but not exclusively, instrumental.
Mm-hmm.
How often do you bring vocals into play, both in this band and previous exposures?
Previously, not at all. This is definitely a, you know, the format of this group is a rock band, like a classic rock band, two guitars, bass, drums. But when we were playing gigs, we started to play covers and some television covers, Neil Young. And so I started singing those. And then when I was working on the music for this record, a couple of the pieces that I came up with musically just seemed to need vocals. It wasn't like I'm going to become a singer now. It was more like I really like this piece. But I don't think it's enough. It's like any kind of anything I'm writing. I'm like, what does this need? What's it telling me to do? You know, the song kind of tells you what it needs. And this one told me, I need vocals. So I sat down and I, you know, wrote lyrics and, you know, did the vocals.
With another cover. Describe your interest in Richard Thompson in this specific piece.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's the best living guitar player, if you ask me, as well as a pretty handy songwriter and lyricist.
Going all the way back to, say, Fairport Convention
days?
Oh,
yeah, sure. I mean, I love all of his stuff. The stuff he did with his wife, then-wife Linda Thompson in the 70s is probably my favorite You know, and this song is great because on the studio, the recorded version that he did, it's really concise. It's like a 3-minute song. But he, in concerts, and I'd heard on some recordings, like live, he would really stretch it out. So we kind of based our version on one of these live versions that he would do with that were like, you know, 10 minutes long, and that also allowed us to kind of do our own thing with it. You know, and like not to emulate it so much as to just sort of take the form and plug ourselves into it.
The album is called Rarity of Experience. Chris Forsythe and the Solar Motel Band will be performing a record release show tomorrow at Philomoka. Chris, thanks for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
And so here's Calvary Cross.